Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. I'm Chad Young, joined as always by Pete Ball. We are recording now on Sunday, May 7th. It's bright and early in the day for me, 9 a.m., but midday for Pete. And I hear it's a beautiful day in Boston, huh?
Oh, it's about time. It's about time. It was all like nasty mid-50s. It is a beautiful 70 degrees right now.
Nice. We've had some good weather out here in Seattle, and then it got gross. And then yesterday, so my son plays baseball, like Little League. It's, you know, middle of the season. We've had a bunch of rainouts because it's Seattle and that happens. Yesterday was like a perfect day, and they canceled the games because the fields weren't playable, they said, because of like rain from the day before or something.
And that's just devastating.
Like, we were literally outside when we got the notification, and I was just like, I can't think of anything I would rather do right now than go like hang out at a baseball field. This is terrible, but yeah. Anyways, we are a proud member of the Pitcherlist Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your favorite podcasting platforms. And don't forget to leave us ratings, reviews. You can follow us on Twitter at Keep or Cut. You can follow Pete at Pete B Baseball. You can follow me at Chad Young. And I think that's all the, you know, disclaimer official business that we need to get out of the way. And so we can get into the content here. And today's episode is going to be sort of a random assortment of stuff. We started with the idea of talking about sort of player trade values, and we do have some trades to talk about here, but there's a few other questions that sort of relate to trade value, sort of don't. And I don't know, I think it'll be a good one. But before we do that, there are some quick news and notes to talk about. The first one, and I don't really know if there's much to say, even for keeper leagues, but Eloy Jimenez had an appendectomy. I just don't even know what to make of that. Like, this guy just, he's like, he had a rough start to the season. He's finally showing some signs of life in the last week. And he doesn't run into a wall. He doesn't injure himself running the bases. His appendix just fails him.
I mean, you're right. There's not a lot to say. A 4 to 6 week timetable, recovery timetable is rough, right? I didn't realize it would be this long. I swear a player within the last like 3 years had this as well. I can't think of who it was. For some reason, I think it was a first baseman. It's just how my mind works. Can't remember. I don't remember what the timetable was there. Here's the most frustrating thing, and we can move on, because it feels like we talk about Eloy all the time as a result of him landing on the IL. When he's healthy, he's an excellent, excellent hitter. And I think sometimes when guys routinely get hurt like this, that gets lost. He's just good. Sometimes he will sometimes go through stretches where you get a little frustrated, like the beginning of the season. But when that dude's hitting, which he was starting to do, he is very, very good. So maybe if you're way ahead in the standings, this could be a time to buy extremely low on Eloy. But otherwise, I totally get the frustration, because trust me, I have more Eloy shares than any of you.
I feel like you're directing that message at me. Since
I can't sell this low on him.
A couple days ago, we were discussing whether or not we should have an Eloy trade discussion on the show, because you have him in that podcast or out of new league we're in. And then I was like, I just messaged you. I was like, well, I guess we're not going to have that discussion now that he's out forever. And now you're like, oh, well, if you're ahead, this is a good time. And that's exactly where I am. I'm up. I've got a good like 10-point lead in our 5x5. And it would be a point at which I could pick up someone like that and sit on him, but I don't know. We'll see. Jimenez, I think, you know, the question I have about him at this point, and this gets into sort of the keeper value, is you and I were both pretty low on Byron Buxton before the season, because he just does not stay on the field. Buxton, by the way, played 26 games in April. It's the most games he's ever played in the month of April. So, like,
I heard that yesterday. I thought of you immediately.
And I think moving him to a full-time DH was a smart decision, and we'll see how that plays out. There's still a good chance he gets hurt at some point, but, like, regardless, you and I were both very low on him because of that. Jimenez, 2020, he played 55 games, right, in the shortened season. Other than that, in his career, 122 in 2019, 55 again in 2021, 84 in 2022. Now he's going to miss a month this year already. At what point do we have to start thinking of him the way we do Buxton and just be like, look, if you get 90 games out of him, like, you should be happy?
I'm just not there yet. Eloy's still young, right? I mean, this has followed Buxton to his prime years. I mean, I guess technically Eloy should be in his prime right now, but Buxton's a lot older, right? And something as fluky as an appendectomy, I know that Buxton has also had his fair share of fluky injuries, but Eloy, it feels like there's a solution earlier in his career, right? Like, he was clearly DHing most of the time, and they were reluctantly putting him in the field. I think when the White Sox are fully healthy, there's no question that Eloy is a DH, and that's it. So, like, Buxton, a lot of his injuries came in the field, and that's just not going to happen to Eloy going forward. It took us a while to get to this point with Buxton, but it hasn't with Eloy. So when Eloy comes back from this appendectomy, which just happens to people, and he's an everyday DH, I kind of expect him to be okay. Maybe I'm a fool for that, right? But, like, he's still young. How old is Eloy? He's got to be, like, 26 maybe even a little bit younger. So I'm not ready to jump from that. He's 26. He won't turn 27 until November. So I can't call him Byron Buxton yet. I just can't do it, especially after something like this, an appendectomy.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, this is just bad luck, right? I think sometimes we talk about, like, oh, he's had a bunch of fluky injuries, and sometimes those fluky injuries are like, well, are they fluky, or does he, you know, make risky decisions in the outfield and therefore hurt himself? Like, an appendectomy is about as fluky as it gets. That has nothing to do with his ability to stay on a baseball field. So I can see what you're saying with him. A couple other AL Central outfielders who are, I guess one of them might not really be an outfielder anymore. Hard to tell. But Alex Kirilloff is back for the Twins. Oscar Gonzalez is back in AAA for the Guardians. Are you just done with Oscar Gonzalez? And if you're getting rid of him, would you look to pick up Kirilloff?
That's two great questions. I'm pretty much done with Oscar Gonzalez. So first of all, Guardians fans before the season, yourself included, were kind of like, Gonzalez could be good. He could stay in the lineup, but there's also kind of a low floor here. And I think fantasy managers went into drafting Gonzalez is already with limited expectations, right? Best case scenario, we're talking like a good batting average. And depending on where he hits in the lineup, maybe a lot of runs because of that good batting average. But I don't know, 10 homers might even seem like a stretch. The fact that he was so bad, and Cleveland has decent options, right? And this is a team that wants to contend this year. They could be making moves. The fact that he has done literally nothing this year kind of leads me to being done with him. So like I said before the show, I asked you $3 Oscar Gonzalez is a cut. And yeah, I think that's a cut. He's a $1 player at this point. And even then, if I needed the roster space, I think he's a cut. Would I add Kirilloff? I think it's worth reminding everybody that Chad and I were huge Kirilloff people. And then this dude literally had to get his wrist bone shaved. Every time I hear that, I kind of just like cringe and my insides die because that just sounds awful.
It does sound terrible.
I don't know what the end result is expected to be. And I can't remember what podcast I was listening to. It was probably Fantasy Baseball Today, but this was a while ago. And it was kind of said like, look, it may just be that Alex Kirilloff is going to have to figure out how to play not feeling 100%. Like, he might never feel 100%. And he needs to be okay with that and be able to play like that. And I don't know if that's going to happen. But for what it's worth, I guess he was performing well in the minors. So I don't know.
Yeah, performing well is an understatement. In 46 plate appearances, so small sample, but a 452 WOBA. He had three home runs. You know, three home runs in 46 plate appearances. That's a pretty nice pace, to be on. Yeah. So he was walking 13% of the time. He was only striking out 17.4% of the time. Again, tiny, tiny sample. But if you believe in Kirilloff's talent and think the big question with him is, How does his wrist feel? Is he healthy? The thing that those numbers in AAA make me feel good about is that he's healthy right now. Now, how long that lasts, how long he can, that's a different question, as always. But I am buying in on Kirilloff. I still really love the talent, and I think now is your opportunity to buy in. And if it turns out like the wrist is just never going to be right, fine. You'll cut him, you'll move on. If, on the other hand, you buy in now, you can buy in relatively low. And if he hits the way he's capable of, and if it's like, wow, it's crazy, it took us this long to get to this wrist shaving thing, but now that I've done it, everything's great. Like, he could be a star.
Yeah, he certainly could be. I think it's worth reminding people that this was a consensus top 10 prospect in baseball. And that doesn't mean too much, right? Otherwise, Andrew Benintendi and Yoan Moncada would be onto their seventh World Series with the Red Sox. But like, it's still something. There's some pedigree here. I'm still, Chad, more excited about his teammate, Royce Lewis. There hasn't been a lot of news coming out of there. But if I had to pick a young Minnesota twin for the second half of 2023, I'm still interested in Royce Lewis, just to throw him back on people's radars.
So since you're throwing Royce Lewis onto the radar, let's I'm going to add something to our rundown. It's not on the list, but I'm going to throw it out there, because in our Keeper Cut Listener League, in our auto new listener league, we're talking a lot about listener leagues today. I made a trade that Royce Lewis was involved in. I traded my $9 Jeff McNeil for a $3 Royce Lewis, a $1 Jonathan Aranda, and a $1 Evan Carter. I mean, I can tell you what I think. I obviously like the deal because I made it, but what do you think, Pete?
I really like it. This is such a cliche line, right? But I think Jeff McNeil is a better real life player than fantasy player, right? It's such a cliche thing that we can throw on a certain type of player, and Jeff McNeil just is that kind of player. Remind me the format, Chad. Did you say Fangraphs points?
No, this is 4x4. This is our 4x4 league, our listener league.
Then I kind of like it even more now, because in 4x4 we're talking slugging percentage as well, right?
And yeah. I think the thing with McNeil is he's so good at on base, right? Like,
sure,
he will prop up that category for you, and he'll score a lot of runs. So I think he's pretty valuable in 4x4.
It's definitely that not that he's not valuable.
Yeah.
But when you're considering your return, like I kind of expect to see Evan Carter this year, right? Like,
I hope so.
The starting left field situation for the Rangers at the moment is a platoon between Travis Janikowski and Bubba Thompson.
And are they still in first place?
I know it's not Houston, so if I had to guess, yes. I don't have the standings up in front of me, but
I'm going to pull them up right now. They are a game up on the Angels and 2.5 up on Houston and 3.5 up on Seattle. Now that division is like, if you're Texas, that division is super talented. The three teams chasing you could all easily pass you. The two teams furthest back from you, right? I mean, let's leave Oakland out of the picture. But the teams in third and fourth there, Houston and Seattle, are, you know, if you had to bet on who are going to be the two best teams in that division the rest of the year, those two teams would be the two I would pick. So, like, you have an opportunity if you're Texas, and you're going to have to find ways to improve your team quickly. And Carter certainly seems like an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, he is obliterating. He's only at AA, but he's obliterating it right now. He's got a higher walk rate than strikeout rate. His WRC plus is up like over 150. I thought there was another outfielder that may get an opportunity before him. I'd have to double check.
Dustin Harris, maybe?
Yeah, that might be it. I was looking at it earlier because I was considering adding Carter in a shallower league. But in Otnew, if you can get him for $1, I think he's going to be up. Chad, if you look at roster resource, the outfielders on the Rangers roster right now, let's forget about Adelis Garcia. He's a lock. He's been awesome. Great. Adelis Garcia. Travis Janikowski, Robbie Grossman, who's DHing, Leody Taveras, who you know I love, but is it ever going to happen? I don't know. Brad Miller, Bubba Thompson, who can't hit his way out of a paper bag, and Josh H. Smith, not to be confused with Jace Move from the Atlanta Hawks back when I was a kid, who could dunk like crazy, great player on NBA 2K11.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carter is also, like, let's talk fantasy value for a moment and get back to sort of our space. Eric Cross, who I've referenced on the show before, is one of my favorite prospect analysts. About a week ago, week and a half ago, put out his new top 10 dynasty prospects and had Evan Carter 7th. And so, like, there's a guy we're going to talk about shortly because of a trade you're looking at, Jackson Churio, who he has now behind Carter by a spot. Wow.
Okay.
And so I'm like, I was in on Carter last year, and I Carter is one of these guys, like, I feel like I made some mistakes with him where I bought in last year. I saw what he was doing. I was interested. I read a couple of reports that were like, hey, this guy could shoot up boards. He looks pretty good. So I bought in. And then, like, when keeper deadline came around, I was like, eh, he's still sort of like a, you know, hovering around the top 100. He's a top 100 guy, but he's not like a top 10, top 20 guy. I guess I'm going to move on. And then by the time draft season came around, it was like everybody was in on him. And now it's gone even higher. And so I saw this opportunity to get him. This trade for me was really about him and Lewis. Jonathan Aranda I like, but he's not hitting well in the minors right now. And the Rays have so many options that I don't really see his path unless he starts absolutely banging down the door. And he's not doing that. So, but Carter, I think, is a potential game changer. And I'm sure. Super excited to have picked him up. Super excited.
I like that deal for you.
So I mentioned Churio. So let's skip the next thing that was on our rundown and talk about an offer you're sitting on right now. So it sounds like you've been offered, you have a $47 Jose Ramirez, and you've been offered a $13 George Kirby and a $2 Jackson Churio for him. Give us some context in this league just so we know what we're looking at.
Sure. So my team sucks. I thought it was great. Like, let me comb through this roster very quickly. Just the offense. Dalton Varsho is my catcher. Matt Olson at first. Jazz Chisholm at second. Tommy Edman at short. I had Corey Seager at short and Tommy Edman at middle infield before Seager went down. Ramirez at third. Outfield, Eloy, Adelis Garcia, Christian Yelich, Jorge Soler, Josh Lowe, my guy. Brian Hayes, who's on fire. This was supposed to be so good, and it's been absolutely atrocious. Part of that is my pitching. I'm in dead last, and I've been in last for a while. So I'm beginning to consider, like, it's time to sell. I wanted to get some controllable young arms to go with my $14 Christian Javier, who's also been a bit of a disappointment this year. And so yeah. I want this manager to know that the offer I sent yesterday was before the Eloy Jimenez news. I sent him basically... basically the same offer. So it was his George Kirby for $13 and his Jackson Churio for $2 for my Jose Ramirez for $46. That was the offer that he countered with. It was the same trade, except I was also giving him Eloy Jimenez for $29, and he would have to add in Tyler Glasnow for $11. So a really nice piece. I was going to give a loan that covered the whole thing. Then Eloy had the appendectomy. So he countered with this. I'm leaning towards accepting, but here's my predicament, Chad. I think George Kirby is going to get hit in arbitration because my team sucks and there's not going to be a lot of players to put dollars on. And I think Kirby's going to be the one that gets hit the most, which would end up making him probably like a $19, $20 George Kirby. And now I just have like a market value George Kirby, as opposed to holding out with my Ramirez and selling him for potentially a lot more. But then I was thinking about Jackson Churio, and although his numbers don't jump off the page right now at AA, he's 19. He's got to be one of the youngest players at AA. Kind of reminds me of Nick York last year. People were getting frustrated, but he was the youngest player. He didn't face a pitcher that was older than him at all, like all last year. A pitcher that was younger than him, I should say, at all last year. Yeah. So I'm hoping that there's obviously more to be had with Churio, even if he doesn't get an appearance in the major leagues this year, which I don't know. Now I'm on the fence. What are your thoughts?
So this is in our Auto New Listener League where your team is very bad. It is in last place. And the only team that is close to as bad as yours is mine.
Makes me feel better. Thanks, Chad.
we're both really struggling. And actually, the team you are talking to is the one that traded for my McNeil. Mm. So that that team is obviously buying pretty aggressively, and they have three incoming loans already, which means they've made. Let's see, they gave up Jordan Walker about a week ago to get Joe Musgrove and Ryan Helsley and Teoscar Hernandez. they made that deal with me now. And then they made, let's see, what was the other deal they made? They traded away Vinny Pascantino for Rowdy Tellez and Luis Castillo. So this is a team that is, they're making their move for sure.
They're buying.
Yeah. So it's I like that. I like seeing teams sort of be aggressive. I try to do that where I can as well. I can't in this league because my team is so bad. But I think for you, I think the thing about Kirby and the arbitration situation, and I give this advice a lot. I try to live by this advice too, is I just don't think about or worry about arbitration when making trades at this point in the season. And the reason is, unless your team is truly atrocious, which I understand you're struggling right now, but there's value on your team, right? There are good young players. Yeah, no, there is, right? Unless your team is truly atrocious, you're going to get somewhere between, let's say, $20 and $30 in arbitration. Right. And most teams are more than 20. A few teams are over 30, but like you're going to get something in that range regardless. So Kirby going from, you know, he'll go to $15 automatically. Him getting another $4 of arbitration and going up to 19 is really not four new dollars on your team. It's $4 that go to him instead of making Jazz Chisholm 30 versus making him 26 or something. Right. Like, or making, I'm trying to look at your roster. Who else? Like Joe Adell comes up, keeps crushing like he is right now. He's $2. He's going to get an arbitration, go up to maybe 12. So maybe he only goes up to 10 because two of those dollars go to Kirby instead. Like at the end of the day, having guys who are getting hit in arbitration is only good for you. So my perspective on that is like, I wouldn't worry about that. Because you're going to get hit with arbitration no matter what. And so how those dollars move around in your team shouldn't stop you from going out and getting someone exciting.
That makes sense. And I think there are, you know, looking at this roster, I thought it was all just like kind of like good players who are kind of market value right now. But obviously, you know, you brought up Adell, you brought up Jazz, who I have for 15. There's other, like Josh Lowe for $1. I hope he doesn't get hit. To your point, if Kirby gets hit with dollars instead of Josh Lowe and I have a $3 Josh Lowe next year, I'll still be pretty happy about that. So that makes sense. Right. I may try to still pry that glass now, see what I can counter with, but I am leaning towards accepting for that particular offer.
Makes sense. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll jump into a few more trades.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, welcome back. Next trade, we want to talk about another listener league. This is one of our listener leagues over on Fantrax. It's a keep nine. You keep it the cost of one round. I think this is the one that's one round higher than what you paid for the guy at the draft. And this is a head-to-head league. So Matt Heckman, who we've talked about on the show before, has been on the show before, always out there looking at the young talent. And he picked up both Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen, who we have talked about on the show before, put them on the trade block. And I offered him Zach Wheeler for the pair. And he accepted. We ended up, there's some draft pick compensation in there. I think I gave him a 12th and he gave me a 14th or something. But there was a lot of back and forth there. Apparently he was talking to you about Sonny Gray at one point in there and trying to figure out what that looked like and ended up deciding he was going with this deal. I go back and forth on this myself because it feels like a future focused deal. Wheeler, I can't actually remember off the top of my head what round I picked Wheeler in, but I don't think he's not likely a keeper, whereas Bybee and Allen are both free agent pickups and therefore will be last round values in keepers, which at this point seems like a good bet, something I would be happy to do. That said, it's a head-to-head league, and I'm in fourth right now. I'm not having a great week this week, I don't think, but I'm right in the mix for a playoff spot. And so I worry, especially if Allen and or Bybee get, you know, shut down later this year, something like that, because of innings, whatever, like, it could really hurt me. What's your take on this?
Yeah, so I it's hard for me to give a take, because I just think it's kind of fair down the middle. On one hand, I think it's too hard to assume, like, all right, it's head-to-head, will I even have this player for the playoffs? Because, like, you could easily have Bybee, and he might not even have Wheeler for our playoffs. Like, I just worry about getting there. For a keeper league, if we're going to talk long-term, we're not talking long-term within the 2023 season. We're not talking about, like, August and September. We're talking about years down the road. Wheeler, as much as I love him, and he has been much better than it looks, you know, the FIP is 2.47. He's posting his best swing strike rate, his best CSW. Like, he looks really good. At the same time, he's 30. How old is Zach Wheeler? This is his age 33 season. So, like, you're getting in a keeper league not just future value, but guys who are performing at a high level right now. Like, I'm sorry, Tanner Bybee has looked pretty damn good. And Logan Allen, to his credit, although I wish he got one more out yesterday, has also looked very good. So
just missed that quality start.
Yeah, drove just crazy. Missed it. Yeah. You're not losing as much this season as I think it might look on the surface. Of course, that all depends on what Cleveland does with the rotation going forward.
Yeah, I think the other piece of this for me was my rotation in that league right now. I have some, like, there's some guys at the top of the rotation I'm very happy with. Luis Castillo, Zach Gallen, Hunter Green has been very good. I picked up Anthony DeSclafani, who's been terrific. But then, like, Nick Lodolo's really struggled.
Yeah.
And my other pitchers, like, I had Wheeler. I have Tyler Wells. The depth is sort of questionable. And I've got, like, my only minor league pitcher that I've got stashed there is Ken Waldichuk, who's been awful. So I'm not calling him up anytime soon. I've got three relievers in my lineup this week, or right now, I should say, not this week, because it's a daily. Andrew Chafin, who, I mean, he's getting saves, I guess. Pierce Johnson, who I guess is getting saves. Ryan Helsley, who I think is hurt right now. Like, just my pitching depth is a little bit lacking. It will get better. I've got Tristan McKenzie on the IL. I've got Liam Hendricks coming back maybe in like a week or two, which is just absolutely incredible. I've got Andres Munoz, should be back at some point someday, I think.
Yeah, soon. He hasn't started his rehab, but
yeah, he's so there. Like, my depth will get better. But that was the big thing for me, was the trade-off from Wheeler to Bybee. Let's assume Bybee's the better of the two. The trade-off from Wheeler to Bybee is pretty significant, but the trade-off from whatever random pitcher I was going to pick up off the wire versus Allen was also pretty significant. And so I felt like, I think this year I can make this work, and in the future it's obviously great for me. So that was sort of the thinking and how I ended up there, and I think it's a pretty fair deal. I think Matt and I will both be happy with it. The fact that Matt's a Phillies fan and I'm a Guardians fan probably didn't hurt our ability to get this trade done, but not the only reason to make the trade, probably not even a good reason to make the trade, but
I mean, at the end of the day, even if it works against you this season, Chad, you got two keepers for a guy who probably wasn't a keeper.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. All right. Let's look at another auto new league. We got a question from a listener, Mike Maud, who is in the auto new Slack, reached out to me. He is in a league with me. It's League 1199. It's a food and travel league. I've talked about it here before.
Love it.
He wants to know.
Explain that again for the audience, because I love this.
The audience. This is it's a group of people who they're in the Otter News Slack. There is a like food and travel channel where we talk about food and travel, and a bunch of the guys there were like, we should start a league of people in this channel who like food and travel, and then decided if there were going to be prizes for a food and travel league, they needed to be food related. And so the way this league works is the fourth through 12th place finishers each offer up some sort of food or beverage prize. They make cookies, beer, coffee. I got a Chicago style hot dog kit this year. Yeah.
So hot dog.
Oh, you never had a Chicago style hot dog? It's like a hot dog with a bunch of stuff on it. There's like pickles and sport peppers and celery salt and all sorts of
sounds
super,
good.
Super neon green relish. But it's a thing. When you're in Chicago, you'll get one. But anyways, the point is that you put these up and then the top three finishers have a draft and get to pick them. And so last year I finished third. That was one of my prizes. My other prize was a beer care package. That was
sweet.
Excellent. But Mike wants to know, is it basically just too late for him given his ERA? And so some context here, it is a 4x4 league. His team is dead last. Now, you and I were talking about how bad our teams were in the listener 4x4 league that you and I are in. His team is better than either of our teams, but is still in last place in this league. So he's a little closer to the pack than we are.
Okay.
And because of the way this league is structured, like I don't know if he agrees with me, but like I just want to be top three. I want to get food instead of sending food.
Hell yeah.
Like to me, the difference between like finishing fourth and finishing third is huge. And the difference between third and first is like not that important to me, right? Yeah. I want to be in that top three. However, his ERA is 4.92. Now, anybody who plays fantasy is listening to the show knows that 4.92 is bad. But for some context here, the next worst ERA in that league is 4.34. So he is more than half a run back of even gaining a single point.
How many innings so far?
He's thrown 301 innings, which is sort of middle of the pack.
Okay.
But I think that gets to the point where he could throw another 1,200 innings. So he could throw four times as many innings as he's thrown so far. His team last year had a lot of the same pitchers. And he's got guys like he's got Sandy Alcantara. He's got Julio Urias, Dylan Cease. Like he has some good pitchers who have been underperforming.
Yeah, that explains a lot of it.
That explains a lot of it. Last year, his ERA was, let's see if I can find his team here, 3.21. If you believe that he is a true, let's say 3.3, let's call it 3.5. Let's be reasonable. Let's say you really think his team is a 3.5 ERA caliber talent. And he has currently thrown about 300 innings at a 4.9. Let's think about this. I'm going to do some math here. And you think he can throw the other 1,200 at 3.5. He could pull his ERA down to 3.78. That's where he would end up. That 3.78, as I go back to this year's standing, sorry, I'm going back and forth between years. That 3.78 would put him sixth in ERA this year and would get him 6 points instead of one for that category. So his question basically is like, is it just too late? And I think the reality is like, I don't think it's too late based purely on his ERA. And he has some decent signs. Like he's middle of the pack in strikeouts. He's middle of the pack in home runs per nine. He is near the top in on-base percentage and runs. The question I think he really needs to ask himself, though, is like, does he think not only does his pitching have to turn around, but he has to go out and pick up some power. He's among the bottom of the league in both home runs and slugging. And it's a climb from the cellar. And I think the challenge he has is if he's going to try to make that climb, he probably has to be aggressive right now. And he might know in a couple months that that aggression didn't pay off. And then what does he do?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to judge my team's ERA after the month of April. That's a really slippery slope. There's, you know, pitchers are getting warmed up and there's still the weather issue, right? Like we saw guys like Luis Castillo last year, right? Be seriously affected by the weather. I'm not saying that's necessarily the case for his guys. Like I'm willing to bet Julio Urias and Sandy Alcantara have pitched in some pretty nice weather, but I mean, you'd think so. Yeah, you'd think so. I don't know how true that is, to be fair, because, you know, one does pitch in the NL East, so maybe he has had some bad luck. And I'm not saying it's all weather-related. Anyway, I'm just not ready to sell up my team's ERA just because of the month of April. On top of that, if you have a rotation that features Alcantara, Urias, and Cease, like, you've kind of made your bed. You know, like, you may need to sleep in that because you put a huge investment into that rotation. And so, like, is a mid-year shift that's that drastic really going to get you in the top three? Or is it just more, which I know is his question, is it more sound to kind of ride this out? And with names like Cease, Urias, and Alcantara, I think I'm kind of riding it out. And it could bite you in the other side if you do say, like, all right, you know what? ERA is a wash. Let's sell these guys for power or something like that. Like, you could miss out on an opportunity to actually make gains in the pitching categories because you're not only moving on from, you know, I assume what he wants to do, Chad, correct me if I'm wrong, is sell his starters for some hitting and kind of plug in some relief pitchers. Is that the idea here?
No, I think what he's trying to decide is, should he just sell? Should he just, like,
all right, that's has then.
Right. And I think the
I'm still no, though.
I think I'm no as well. I agree with you, by the way, that, like, you don't want to judge your rotation, especially your rates in your rotation, based on April. I think the question he's asking isn't like, is my pitching just bad, right? Are Dylan Cease and Sandy Alcantara terrible and Julio Urias merely okay? Like, that's I don't think that's his question. I think his question is, like, I've banked the stats I banked, and is it too late to turn things around? And I think what I would say to him is, no, I don't think it's too late, but I would be a little bit cautious for now. Because I think what you don't want to do in this situation is get overly aggressive to buy. And he's got some fun young talent. He's got Jackson Holliday, who's so far away, I would trade him. So if you trade Jackson Holliday, go do it. But he's got Ellie De La Cruz. He's got Kyle Manzardo, Curtis Mead. Like, he's got some fun young talent that he could trade. And so I think what I wouldn't want to do if I were him is so aggressively shop those guys that I leave myself with a bare cupboard and still it turns out not to be enough. Actually, looking at his roster, like, he has Corey Seager, who's been hurt. He will help his power for sure. He's got, I mean, let's see who else. He's got Teoscar Hernandez, who should hit for more power as the season goes on. Joey Gallo is a good power source. He got Jorge Polanco, who missed a bunch of time, but will certainly help with power now that he's back, especially over, I have no idea who he was playing at middle infield, but let's see, his middle infield. Some combination of, well, he's got Gleyber Torres, which is good. And then, like, Josh Rojas, Gio Urshela. Yeah. Seager, who's hurt. Like, he has opportunities for his team to improve. And I think if I'm him, what I would do is, like, give it a few more weeks, at least a couple more weeks, maybe till Memorial Day. See where you are at that point. Like, if your ERA has come back to the pack and you're like, okay, I think I can get to middle of the pack in ERA. And, like, okay, I'm starting to hit for some more power and, like, everything's moving the right direction, then I think you can get aggressive about buying. If at that point things are still looking terrible, there will still be opportunities to sell, especially because, like, if I look at his high price guys, a $50 Ronald Acuna, a $36 Corey Seager, if he decides to sell, like, Nick Castellanos at 21, Teoscar at 18, if he wants to move on from some of those pitchers, like, he will have buyers for those guys. So I don't think he should be in a rush to sell.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say at the end there is, like, now that I understand this is just a should I sell or not, as opposed to should I adjust my strategy? No way. Because those names, they're going to still have a lot of value a month, even 2 months from now. And teams that are going for it will be even more likely to maybe buy because they're like, wow, I'm really in the thick of this. It's mid-season. Yeah. It's not just 1 month in. So those names that you'd be looking to sell, you'll still be able to sell. So unless something comes across the table that's too good to pass up, I'm holding. Why not?
I agree. Next question that I wanted to ask you about, and this is a question for me, because in my CBS league that I've talked about before, we have a minor league draft. The way the minor league draft works, it's a two-round draft. And those guys get stashed in the minors until you're ready to call them up. If you stash them for the full season, you can call them up in the off season. And what that effectively means is, so I'll explain this. My first round pick in this draft was Masataka Yoshida. My second round pick was Brett Beatty. Based on where I made those picks, if I call them up, I would pay a $1 salary on Beatty and a $2 salary on Yoshida. If I wait, so if I call them up now, let's say, I can use them all year. That's great. But then in the offseason, their salaries go up to $3 and $4 instead of staying at $1 and $2. If I waited till after the season to call them up, they're only $1 and $2 next year. So I save $4 a salary between them. In addition, if I call them up, they use up a roster spot, whereas right now they don't. Now, I've got a couple of guys, like I've got Trey Mancini, who's been hitting better lately. I've got Spencer Steer, who's been sort of struggling lately. But like, I could move on from those guys to make room for Yoshida and Beatty if I wanted to. But other guys who come up later in the year who aren't on a roster yet, like there are guys out there that I might want to pick up that these guys right now are not using up roster spots. And so the debate I'm having with myself is like, especially with Yoshida, although Beatty's been awesome too, is am I hurting myself too much by waiting to call these guys up? And should I just be like, use them now because they're playing well? Or is the value of saving two roster spots, keeping their salary down, they have a higher trade value because a team playing for the future will be more interested in them as stashes than they will as rostered players. Like, am I just overthinking that? And I should just be like, dude, these guys are good. Use them.
So for Beatty, my question is, who's third base? Is there a corner infield and who's utility?
That is a good set of questions. There is corner infield. My third baseman is Jose Ramirez. He's good. He's not a bad player at all. There we go. So I have Matt Olson at first base, who is also a decent player. My corner infielder right now. So there's a bunch of movement. I have a bunch of moving parts in this team. In theory, my middle infield is Marcus Semien, Willy Adames, and Max Muncy. But I also have Jorge Polanco. So like today, Jorge Polanco's in my middle infield spot and Max Muncy's in my util spot because Spencer Steer is in my corner infield spot. I also have Joey Gallo, who is on my bench today because it's a head-to-head and I'm winning home runs by a lot and I don't need home runs. I need other stuff. But like Gallo is both first base and outfield. Mancini is first base and outfield. So like I've got some moving parts around that corner infield spot where like different guys go in and out. Cause the rest of my outfield, like I have Kyle Schwarber, who while he hasn't been very good, I'm very happy with Luis Robert, who's been much better lately. Jack Sawinski, who's been terrific for me. Christian Yelich, who's been very good for me. So like, there's just a lot of moving parts there.
Okay.
So Beatty coming in, like if I made changes right now, Beatty would effectively be a 1-for-1 swap for Spencer Steer and would probably be in my lineup half the time, something like that. Not every day. Yoshida would be probably a 1-for-1 swap for Trey Mancini. He's probably my worst outfielder right now. And he would then push someone to the bench. Jeez, I don't even know who. Probably Beatty, I guess. He'd push Beatty to the bench is what he would do.
Yeah, so with Beatty, like, it's going to sound hypocritical because you could say this about Yoshida as well, but with Beatty, I'm not going to judge calling him up right now based on what he's already done because he's so young. He's going to go through ups and downs. Like, just because he's hitting 294 with an OPS over 800, he's not going to do that the rest of this. He most likely is not going to do that every month the rest of the season, right? So I wouldn't just look at what he's done. You miss that, that's gone. The fact that you have so many good options, and I still kind of like Spencer Steer, and you would only play him 50% of the time, he may actually be worth stashing. Yoshida, he's 29 years old. He already has professional experience. Like, I think you're just missing what might be his best performances. He's in a lineup so far that is scorching. He's got a very quick bat. Like, I think this is just kind of who Yoshida is. We're already seeing the plate discipline stuff reflect exactly what the projection system suggested.
And this is an OBP league.
So, yeah, I think you have to get him in there. I mean, you mentioned he would replace Mancini, which is already the upgrade of the century. But Jack Sawinski, too. Like, I really like Sawinski. I like that he's adding a stolen base component. But before yesterday's homer, I'm making this up, he was like 0 for his last 14 with like 8 strikeouts. It was something close to that. So he's going to be a streaky player with how much swing and miss there is. I mean, we're talking about like a 30% strikeout rate. So I'd be happy that I've had Sawinski, because that makes the fact that I've lost out on this ridiculous 1450 game hit streak from Yoshida, like, I'll feel like, okay, you know what? I missed that, but I had Sawinski in there and he kind of made up for it. I'm not going to bank on that going forward with a player with that strikeout rate. And I can't miss out on any more Yoshida. He keeps hitting like this. He's not just a rookie of the year candidate. He's an MVP candidate. 320 yeah. with power and a little bit of speed, and he never strikes out. I mean, he has been that valuable. So I have to do what I can to get him in there. He's one of the hottest players in baseball.
Yeah. Okay. I was looking at this. I think the way this league works, because games have already started today, if I drop Mancini right now, it won't actually give me the spot until tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I was actually thinking, like, maybe I will just make this change and put Yoshida in my lineup literally this moment. But
if you don't have to, I'd wait as long as I can. Yeah.
I guess if I'm going to drop Mancini anyways... All right, let's try this. We're going to run a test right now, live. Mancini's not in my lineup today anyways, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
So I've dropped him. My transaction has been processed. Oh, there's a spot right there. Wait, no. This is tomorrow. Yeah. If I go back to today, Mancini still exists. Well, that's annoying. All right. Doesn't matter. Mancini's gone. Yoshida will be back. He'll be in my lineup tomorrow. Happy to have him.
I think that was the right move.
Let's take one more quick break, and then we'll try to rapid fire through some stuff because we want to get done. All right, welcome back. Another trade to look at. Pete, in your league, this is a blockbuster, man. And these numbers in parentheses, these are the
round values.
Draft round values in these guys. So we've got a first-round Trey Turner, an 11th round Nick Castellanos, a 7th round, is that Dustin May?
Dustin May, yeah.
7th round Dustin May, and then a free agent Will Smith, the reliever. So he was picked up as a free agent, so it'll be last round pick to keep. A 11th round Clay Holmes, 7th round Yoshida, we just talked about, 3rd round Max Fried, and a 6th round Anthony Volpe. So, I mean... Man, there's a lot going on here.
So right off the bat, some more context. With this being a 16-team league, it's worth keeping in mind that a first-round Trey Turner is potentially worth a lot more than it looks. Because if you do end up, you know, with the 14th, 15th, or 16th pick, Trey Turner is not going to be a 14th, 15th, 16th overall pick guy. He's probably still going to be a top 8 at worst player. So that's important context here.
Yeah, it also just drives up the value on all of these guys. Right. I think the interesting thing, though, as I look at this is like, so I agree. If you're picking end of the first round, Turner looks like a good value here. A lot of these other guys, I'm sort of, I don't know. Like, is Fried a great keeper as a third round pick? He's an excellent pitcher. I love Fried, but I don't think he's a great keeper as a third round pick. I don't think Volpe's going to be a 6th round pick.
He'd have to perform at a really high level.
Yeah. Holmes looks like he might lose the closer job at some point.
Both relievers are droppable. He's basically lost.
Yeah. And Smith he has the job, but like, we'll see how long he keeps it. Dustin May is not a 7th round pick. So like, I don't know. Castellanos for an 11th, if he keeps hitting the way he's hitting, is decent. And Yoshida for a 7th is decent. But those are really the only sort of keepers in this deal, which makes it much more of a like, present day trade. And it's like I don't even know how to look at this. Like, one team down, one like matching guys up, one team downgraded from Trey Turner to Anthony Volpe, upgraded from Castellanos to Yoshida, upgraded from May to Fried, and then I don't know, I guess downgraded from Smith to Holmes or upgrade. I don't even know what to call that because I don't know how to value either of those guys.
There's better relievers on the free agent market. So I view them as irrelevant.
Got it. So I think from that perspective, I like the Turner side here better, especially if that team is on their, sorry, I like the side that gave up Turner better, especially if that team isn't immediately going to be a top of like a first place team picking at the end of the first round kind of thing. Because if they're not, if you're not picking late enough in the first round, then that Turner's not that valuable to keep. And in the meanwhile, I think you've upgraded your outfield, you've upgraded your rotation. But I see this for both sides. I totally see this for both sides. It's just a lot going on.
It is a lot going on. They're both trying to compete. They're off to a little bit of slow starts, but they're solid managers. I kind of expect them to be in it. I think like the sticker shock is giving up Trey Turner and only getting as a best player Max Fried, but it's worth pointing out that like starting pitching in this league is at a premium. Forget about the fact that starting pitching around the league is down so much. It's just this league, typically, historically, it is very, very hard to acquire starting pitching. In a 16-team league, like there are few options out there. So you kind of just have to pay up for it. Obviously, with the way Yoshida's been hitting, I think that manager's pretty excited. But I could see it going either way here.
Yeah. And I think with that context of the pitching, I think Fried is that he's a big get. So I like that a lot.
It is a strikeouts per nine league, and Fried is not exceptional in that regard. But for That's wins true. And quality starts, which we also count, like there's more value. So it all kind of washes out.
Yeah. So got a question. Who are you out on among this group of breakout hitters? So Nolan Gorman, Josh Lowe, Yandy Diaz, Brent Rooker, and James Outman. And I've got some thoughts on who I might be out on, but I'm curious, which of these guys are you just like, I don't buy it?
So I want to believe in Outman, but it's a 34% strikeout rate. Like, that just will not play all season. And he has shown us no reason to expect it to go down. Like, there's nothing in his track record that makes me think, like, oh, his strikeout rate will improve. Last year, it was obviously an incredibly limited sample size, but it was not even... it wasn't like that much better. It was just 16 plate appearances, but in those 16 plate appearances, he struck out 7 times. So it's in his minor league track record would suggest he's a strikeout guy. There's just a lot of swing and miss. He reminds me of Jackson Winski. I'm just not. I'm willing to sell high if I have Outman. The other one is Nolan Gorman. I believe in the talent. I think he's awesome, but I also think the Cardinals are stupid, and I think they're showing that to us right now. And he's had 6 plate appearances against lefties. And I'm sorry to go on this rant again, but like, how is he going to get better against lefties if he never faces them? And if your team stinks, if you're in last place and you're a joke because your ace is Jack Flaherty, like, I don't know, give the guy a chance against lefties. Let's see what he's got. I just, what the heck are we doing here? And so I want to be in on Nolan Gorman, and in long term, sure, I am. But for this season, what are you going to get? He didn't face the last 2 lefties they faced. He's in the lineup today because they're facing a righty.
Yeah. I think, by the way, I think Outman could end up in a similar situation. His numbers so far against lefties are actually quite good. He has a 161 WRC plus against lefties and a 151 against righties. So he is, but the against lefties, that's in that there, he has a 17.6% walk rate that I do not think he will continue, and a 467 BABIP versus lefties.
Wow,
which
that would be nice if he maintained.
His ISO against lefties, and keep in mind, like, BABIP will help ISO because any you know ball in play that turns into a double helps your ISO, right? He has a 185 ISO against lefties versus 326 versus righties. It's just his performance against righties seems much more legitimate to me. But even that's inflated with it. You have 362 BABIP against righties. So I think there's a good chance that Outman ends up in a platoon role and coming way back down to earth. And I think he's the one that I'm most of this group. He's the one I would sell high on. The others, like, I don't know. Yandy Diaz is, I think I it's like all legit. The fly ball rate's up. He hits the ball hard. Like, you know, is he going to keep putting up a 196 WRC plus? No, but like, I think he's legitimately breaking out to another level. Low, I think you worry about playing time because the Rays are going to Ray and things might happen there. But he's not striking out a ton. The walk rate is solid. Again, the BABIP's a little bit inflated, but it's not. It's any guy who's breaking out like this, like the BABIP's likely to be inflated, but like his ex-woba is a 370. So that's not really super concerning to me right now. Like he's hitting the ball really well, which is how he's getting the numbers he's getting. So Outman's the one who I'm most concerned about, but honestly, I like all these guys. I'd be happy to have any of them on my roster right now, but Outman is, if I had them all, Outman's the one I'm selling. Although I agree with you on Gorman. I think Gorman short-term too.
Concerns.
Yeah. Another question we had come in, pitching rates. Basically, a question is, are pitching rates a waste in head-to-head? And the specifics of this question were, with rates being so variable week to week, is it actually worth spending on elite pitching, or should you be selling off your pitching to get more stable statistics? Go get a great bullpen and rack up saves. And, you know, maybe you volume your way to strikeouts. And then every once in a while, you know, random variation, you win ERA or whip anyways. What do you do in head to head? Do you buy into that theory?
I don't, because like for as many weeks as like Kevin Gausman is going to give up 8 earned runs to the Red Sox, he's also going to have those weeks where he goes 8 innings and gives up 0 earned runs and strikes out 11 Yankees or whatever it was. So I guess it more depends on the pitchers. If there's a guy who I think is an obvious sell high or something, like Johan Oviedo a couple weeks ago, not anymore, then sure, I'll cash out and I'll get something for him. But there's nothing guaranteed in head-to-head, right? Because in a week-to-week basis, you know, you could end up facing Ryan Mountcastle, like I seem to do, whenever that guy goes off, when he has a 3-home run or 2-home run game, and he'll outperform your Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and that is just fantasy baseball. So in a week-to-week basis, I have a hard time being like, oh, I'm going to commit to the Marmol strategy, which is just that, named after Carlos Marmol, right? The reliever who would go multiple innings and strike out a ton of guys, even though he actually kind of sucked. Like, I'm not ready to adopt that strategy, because you do that and then all it takes is one bad relief appearance. And now not only are you donezo in strikeouts and in wins, but you've also ruined your ratios for the week, because even if you get to like 17 innings pitched, if one of those innings was 4 earned runs with 5 walks or whatever, you know, you're still probably in trouble that week. So I'm not ready to sell out for anything. I mean, everything depends on cost, right? If you do dangle your starting pitcher and somebody's willing to give you an amazing hitter and an amazing closer for them, like, sure, but that's just based on value, not necessarily on strategy.
Right. Yeah. I actually think in some regards, it's the other way for me, that I've gone back and forth on this over the years, but basically what I found is I want to have a really strong rotation if I can in my head-to-head leagues, because of what you said, right? Like if you're running off streamers and stuff over the course of a season long league, if you're running off streamers and you do a decent job of balancing, like, yeah, you'll have some blowups in there, but it'll get balanced out if you're regularly making good choices. In a week, one bad choice and you could be done. Right. So I like to, you know, yes, you're going to have those weeks that like, man, I paid up for all these aces and two of them got lit up and that was, you know, really annoying. But in general, you're going to do better overall by having those guys in place. And so that tends to be my preferred strategy.
One last quick note on head-to-head categories is, and I've said this before, in head-to-head categories, power is king. So if you feel like you have a balanced team and you want to sway a little bit more towards getting a power hitter for one of your pitchers, I will always be for that. Always go after homers. That is king in head-to-head categories.
Yeah. So last few minutes here, we've got a handful of tweets that came in. I'm going to run through them right now. The first one is from @JoeHornsPhone. Joe Horn's cell phone tweeting at us.
Cool.
Middle of the pack team. What do we do with DeGrom at $31 when he gets healthy? $31 is a great price when he's healthy, keyword playing. But would it be better to ship him at his peak value when he's healthy and sell? You didn't even let me finish the tweet. I think I did have like a $31-ish DeGrom in one league, and I traded him for like a $50 Aaron Judge, because I was just like, and I did this before he got hurt, before either of them were hurt, to be fair. They got hurt like the same day. The manager reached out to me. He's like, dude, we made this deal, and then they both got hurt. But Judge is going to be back soon, and I think he will hopefully stay healthy after that. Whereas DeGrom, I worry about. My concern would be, I think you may have already missed the peak value window, right? Like, this injury is just a reminder that he's going to get injured. And so, yeah, he'll come back. He'll have a good start or two. I would shop him at that point. But I'd be curious to see if you get much, or if people are like, I don't know, you used up two of his good starts. He's only got three left. And if that's what, if that's the kind of value you're going to get, then you should just sit on him.
Yeah. So for this particular injury, I'm not like concerned about the health of Jacob DeGrom. Let me put it that way, which sounds ridiculous. Bochy seems upbeat about it. He says he feels great. We're in a 3-week window. We're already 1 week into it. So he should be back, you know, within 2 weeks, which is terrific. But I think it's actually a sign of how the Rangers are approaching this contract with Jacob DeGrom. Whereas if DeGrom has the sniffles, or if DeGrom has a hangnail, or if DeGrom says, oh man, I stepped on, you know, my kid's Lego set this morning, they're going to shut him down for 2 weeks. And I just kind of expect that to be the case. I mean, we saw he had a couple of weeks ago, he had like wrist soreness and he was throwing like a perfect game. They're like, nope, you're coming out. You're coming out right away after four innings. To be fair to the Rangers, that might be the right approach. But what does that do to DeGrom? Like, it's fun to say, like, yeah, when he's healthy, he's a great $31 value. But we live in a world where $31 is probably just about right for Jacob DeGrom. Like, I'm not sure you have this slam dunk value unless he does give you 150 innings. Even, you know, with DeGrom, I'll take 130 innings. But is he going to get there with how much he gets hurt? I don't think so.
Especially if they are hanging around and feel like the important thing is to keep him healthy for the postseason. And with,
sure,
like, if you think about the postseason format in baseball now, with like half the league making it, and that first round being basically like, you know, it's 2 of 3. If you have a best 2 of 3 and you get to start Jacob DeGrom in the first, like, that's a big advantage. And I think they're going to be very focused on setting that up. So I agree with you on that. We got a trio of questions. Here we go. Tim Kanak, who is at Fantasy Aceball, hosts the Fantasy Aceball podcast. He's in that Podcasters League with us. You and I have both been on his show. Tim's a good guy. You should check out his show. He sent us three questions on Twitter. First, if you are selling in an auto new league, how much should the seller value their loan dollars in a deal? Example, if there's a pretty even trade, 1-for-1 offered, but loan dollars must be exchanged to get rosters legal, should the seller just throw the dollars out to get the deal done?
I'm saying, yeah, if I'm selling, take what you want, man. Like, unless I think there's a better deal to be had with someone else where I could use that money. But man, I got $400 to loan out. I'm loaning it. Exactly $400, but you know what I'm saying. I'm curious to hear what you say, but I'm take it. Take my money.
I agree, but it depends a little bit on what my situation is. So as a seller, one thing I want to be able to do is play the wire for breakouts, right? Because yes, you can trade a star player for a future star, but like, you could also find a guy for a buck as a free agent who breaks out. So I like to have money to play around on the wire. If I've got $10, $12, $15 in cap space, then like, yeah, I'll just make that loan. If I've got like only like, what I don't want to do is make a loan that leaves me with like $3 in cap space, $2. Like, I want to make sure that I still have the space I need. That's how I look at it. So to me, it's less about like, dollars have real value, but they only have value insofar as you can use them. And so if I have a lot of cap space, then additional dollars don't matter that much to me. If I don't have a lot of cap space, then they do. And so that's where I get into negotiating. And in that case, like, for me, it's usually not like, oh, I'm trading you this $50 bat for two prospects who are $5 total. And I'm like, I expect to get $45 in cap relief. It's not that. But what I would do is say, like, instead of a $45 loan to balance the salaries, what if I loaned you $40? What if I loaned you $42? Like, I do look for ways to just get a buck or two even. Like, do a $43 loan instead of a $45 loan and get yourself a couple extra dollars of cap room. On the other hand, if I'm a seller and I have a bunch of cap space, because let's say part of being a seller was that I, you know, had a $60 DeGrom who I've now cut and someone else picked up and I've got just all the cap space I could ever want, I'll use those dollars to get deals done. Like, I'll reach out to a team that's buying and be like, you're buying and you have no cap space. And so I want this other prospect added in, and I'll throw $5 in on top of the loan. So you have a little bit of space to play around with and do some stuff on the wire that you're going to need to do to, you know, stream guys to get through the season. So
yeah,
I would say, like, I don't let dollars get in the way of a deal unless it is out of line.
Right. That, and I'm in lockstep with that. And I kind of view it the opposite way as well. If I don't have a guy I'm going to cut up front, there may be guys in my roster who, like, when I sell, no one's going to take, like, maybe no one takes my $29 Eloy or my $38 Scherzer. So if I want that money to buy a player off free agency later, I'm going to cut these guys, take half that salary, and throw it towards whoever's on free agency that I want.
Yeah. His next question, how likely are you to keep players over $45 year over year, even if they are your best player or a superstar? So, like, think about, you know, $45, $50, Jose Ramirez, Ronald Acuna, guy like that. If selling, do you move core pieces like this and hope to buy them back or a similar player the following year, or do you hold on to your core guys?
Yeah, I like flexibility, but I also have been, I got bit so bad this year by inflation in auctions. So while you may look and you're like, all right, I got this $50 Acuna, and that's about market value, so he could be a cut for me. Well, keep in mind, when he goes to auction next year, he's going to go for like 60, so if not more. So I'd keep that in mind, that I kind of, if I have a superstar at like their correct value or their average value, I'm actually probably just going to hold on and I'm going to build around that piece as opposed to hoping I can get him back, because I think that's a dangerous game to play.
I tend to be the opposite. I'd rather trade that guy and get something that I'm like, it, you know, Tim used the phrase core guys or core players here. And like, to me, a $50, $60, even a fair price on a guy like that, that's not my core. My core are the like $10 guys who are worth 20, the $5 guys who are worth 20. Like, those are the guys I consider my core. That's who I build around. And so I think if I were a GM of a major league team, the way I would think about this is like, I've got a bunch of guys who are ARB eligible, maybe pre-ARB, and like, that's my core. And free agency is where I build around that. And that's sort of how I think about this too. And so I'm actually much more likely to trade away that star player unless I think they're underpriced pretty significantly.
No, that makes sense. I'm on board with that.
Yeah. His third question, how do you value proximity versus perceived skill level of prospects in Auto New against other dynasty or keeper style formats? Is there a dollar value you apply based on minor league level or a way you quantify proximity? I'll answer this one first, which is, for me, like, I don't look at prospects in A ball. I just don't. Like, I'm just like, if you're not in double A, then I'm not that interested, because both because of the proximity issue, but also because just like, A ball is noisy. Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. There are so many guys who've been stars in A ball and then got to double A and it was like, oh, baseball's hard. So I just don't want to be in that business. So that's, for me, like, there's not a dollar value to it. It's not like, oh, a guy who might be here tomorrow, I'm going to pay more for than a guy who might be here later in the season. Like, I'm not, that's, I probably would, but that's not how I don't put it like a, that's worth an extra dollar per month or something like that. But if I don't think you're going to be up this year or early next year, I'm probably not interested. And if you're an A ball, I'm probably not interested.
Yeah, it's just, you also get the dollar put on top, right, every offseason. It's just, you're right. I mean, the key word there is noisy. There are guys in A ball, most of the guys in A ball will never see the major leagues. So you always have to consider the talent level, the age level, all that stuff. And that includes players who, maybe not necessarily at A ball, but guys who are like 24, 25 years old and playing in double A and or triple, even triple A. Like, I'm only going to put so much stock in their performance because they should be there and they should be almost ready for the major leagues. So prospects are a tricky deal for me in Ott New. And frankly, that's why I haven't accepted that Jackson Chirillo trade yet. And he's a great prospect.
Right. And I will say the question here was versus dynasty or other keeper style formats. Like, dynasty, yeah, in a dynasty league, I'll grab a guy who's an A-ball. Like, you have to. There's no other way to build a farm system. Because the guys the guys who are in double A, triple A, like, they've been rostered for a couple of years. So, like, you got to go find those guys. I get that. Most other keeper formats, like, to me, most other keeper formats, the minor league is even shallower than it is in Auto New. So, like, you have, like, true dynasty is the deepest minor leagues. And you've got Auto New. And then now you have most of my other keeper leagues. And in those, like, you better be up this year. Like, yeah, you better be up soon or else I'm really not interested.
Right.
So Yeah. And the final question we got on Twitter from Jeff, at Jeff with like, I don't know if it's his phone number. I don't know what it is. It's a lot of numbers after his name.
Do not call Jeff.
But at Jeff something wants to know $2 Josiah Gray for $7 Josh Naylor.
Is cutting both an option? No, I'm only kidding. I actually
like both of these guys.
Gray has a lot of prospect pedigree, a decent amount, right? And he's shown strides this year. I'm pretty sure I have to look it up, and I'll look it up while you're talking. But I'm pretty sure the long ball is still an issue for him. There's still inconsistent performances, and frankly, I don't trust the Nationals to develop players anymore. They've been pretty much a disaster with all the prospects they've gotten. Now, to be fair, many of them are still very young. Like I heard some people on a pod being kind of hard on CJ Abrams. CJ Abrams can barely buy a beer, man. Like, I get he's been disappointing, but he's still pacing for like 15-30 or something awesome like that. So not to turn this into a question about CJ Abrams, I'm less enthused with Naylor. I think what is best case scenario for Josh Naylor? I don't think it's that terrific. So Gray, I guess I like the Gray side, but I'm not super interested in either player.
I'm interested in both. So Gray
has solved the home run problems, by the way, for now.
I mean, solved. Right now, they're not a problem. We'll leave aside solved.
They look good so far.
Gray last year, 39.2% four seamers, 29.5% sliders, 24.8% curves. This year, he is throwing the slider more than any other pitch, 32.9%. The four seamers down to 30.1. The curve is also down a bit to 20.1. And his cutter, which he threw once last year, according to Baseball Savant, he is throwing 15.8% of the time. So he has shifted from being sort of four-seamer and breakers to bouncing between a four-seamer and a cutter, using his breaker, his slider in particular, more often. He's completely ditched his sinker, which he used sparingly last year to horrific results. So he's made some changes in his pitch mix and in his approach that are, to me, meaningful, right? It's there's some evidence here of a change in approach, a change in strategy, a change in his thinking as a pitcher that is bearing results for him.
And I mean, so it's kind of simple, right? He's throwing the fastball 10% less, and so he's giving up less home runs. Like, I mean, that's a good change, assuming the other pitches stay good.
Yeah. Now, the concern I will note is the strikeouts are still not great. The walks are still not great. And so, like, he's got that shiny 3.03 ERA, but it's a 4.45 FIP, 4.50 Sierra. Like, it's not all pretty. However, his xERA is 3.50 because he actually is inducing much softer contact than he did last year. That is something that could theoretically, anyways, stick. So that's why I like him. For Naylor, I think the big thing is, like, he could be a big power source for you and he could hit for a high average. He showed up, Eno Saris, who we cited him last week on the show. We'll do it again this week. He had an article that came out on Friday about the best sort of buy low bats. And Naylor showed up in there as one of the guys that he would be buying low on. Just a quick read of one paragraph. He says, Naylor is barreling the ball more than he ever has, chasing about as much as ever, and swinging and missing just a tad bit more than usual. He looks like he's pulling fly balls at a good rate too. So, and you know, he's saying like 20 home runs, 270 average, like that's pretty useful. And that's the kind of thing that I think you can get from Naylor. So I like both of these guys. I think if I had to choose between them, I think I would choose Gray, because I think the upside is higher, but I also think he's riskier. Like, Naylor is more likely to just produce for you. Whether or not he produces at a elite level, I don't know. Gray is more likely to be a cut in a month, but he's also the one who could, like, he could become an ace. There is that potential in there still. So,
and he's cheaper, which
and he's cheap.
I'll take those dollars and the higher upside any day.
Yeah. Yep. So I think that's about it. You should go enjoy the sunshine you finally got. And with that, thank you for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.